A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A Living History production.
I'm Peter Hart.
And I'm Gary Bain.
And together, we're Pete and Gary's Military History
Podcast. Hello, 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 and welcome to the podcast. I'm Gary Bain, and once more joined by Peter Hart. Good morning, Peter.
You seem below par today, Gary. Have you had some sort of personal tragedy or got up the wrong side of bed?
You're my personal tragedy.
Yes, I thought you might say that. Right.
What are we doing today, Pete?
Well, we're doing another in our popular series, Laugh or Cry. And this one's called Out of the Line.
We've done an Out of the Line.
But hard at work.
Ah, I see. Right, okay. Now, these are being broadcast in support of our new book, which is called, imaginatively, Laugh or Cry, British Soldier on the Western Front, 1914 to 1918.
And that's available in, well, it's available everywhere. So just get it bought, all of you. If you want to support the podcast, what better way of supporting the podcast is than Gary? Should they buy us a coffee?
No.
Should they, well, if that stupid system that they brought in to patronise us. Should they do that, Gary?
Yes, we need patronising.
Yeah. No, Gary. What they should buy the book.
They should. It is a good way of supporting us, and it was a lot of hard work, frankly.
Bit of a laugh, I thought.
Oh, right. Now.
You doing the crying, I'll do the laughing.
Moving on swiftly. Oh, yeah, right. This is the second of two about being out of the line.
Well, last week we did out of the line recreations.
Yeah, and this is the non-recreational version. Now, out of the line may have seemed like heaven on earth when soldiers were in the line, but they soon found that normal military duties and discipline continued. Any fantasies of a veritable paradise were swiftly disabused by the army.
They disabused your idea of paradise, didn't they?
They just disabused me. And this is what Captain John Milne of the 1st 4th Leicestershire Regiment, started, you mean to go on, has to say.
The phrase 6 days' rest was really a snare and a delusion. In the imagination, we'll look forward to sleep unlimited, parcels from home galore, letters from at least half a dozen armfuls of delicious womanhood, alluding affectionately to the joys of past and future leaves. One envisions of binges in Baal, razzles in Renninghurst, and perchance passion in Poppering. I see what he's doing. He's got alliteration mad here, hasn't he? But in reality, 6 days' rest was an entirely different affair. Certainly it began with parcels and sleep, followed by baths and clean clothes. But after that, it was sadly tarnished by, "A commanding officer will inspect! The battalion will parade!" Or, "A working party will be furnished!" Which meant that companies had to pull themselves together and remember that they were soldiers once more and not semi-troglodytes living in trenches and dugouts. I see why you didn't read this one. And that as soldiers, they had to stand smartly to attention, to fix bayonets, to keep the thumb in line with seams of the trousers and the feet at an angle of 45 degrees. And after the morning had been energetically spent in drill and bayonet fighting, they would be gratified to hear that there'd be a route march in afternoon.
I just could point out he was a captain.
Yeah. Yep. He was a working class
and
captain.
And he was from Leicestershire.
Leicester, that's generic Midlands.
Now, guard duties had to be done around the billets, stores and headquarters, which gave rise to this splendid story, which illustrates the cheery nature of the Australian soldier.
You love this, and you picked loads by this bloke. I remember you saying, oh, I've got this great one.
This is Lieutenant Walter Belford of the 11th Australian Battalion. Unfortunately, one of the boys detailed for guard was about the most casual soldier in the whole Australian Army, and his presence in the guard worried Fergie so much that he took him aside and gave him a lot of private instructions as to what he should do if he saw the commanding officer or a field officer approaching. The digger promised to do his best. When his turn came for sentry go, it seemed as if the fates had heard Sergeant Ferguson's prayer, for hardly a leaf stirred in the village. But Jock's coaching was not to be wasted, for Major Boyd Ahrens, who was then temporarily in command of the 11th Battalion, appeared at a considerable distance away. The sentry immediately came to the slope and then gave the Major a smart present arms. There was no response, as the Major had not noticed him. But the casual one was not to be balked in this manner. He lowered his rifle, put his fingers in his mouth and emitted a piercing whistle. The CO stopped dead in his tracks and gazed in the direction of the sound. The sentry waved his hand, pointed to himself, and then, in his best style, presented arms. The Major, who was always a real sport, appreciated the situation and returned the salute.
How would that go in the British Army, do you think? Oh, dear. Now, let's have a bit of balance in this. Let's have a story about Insouciant, British Guards, and a surprisingly tolerant commanding officer. This is what? Second Lieutenant Reginald Russell of the 11th Queen's Own Royal West Kent Regiment. Now,
Lewisham Battalion. We've had a few from the Lewisham Battalion.
Well, it's a very funny book. It's not funny is the wrong word, but it's got lots of humour in the battalion history.
It's a very funny book.
Some of the signals were at one period detailed as part of the coal dump guard. After lights out one night, the regimental sergeant major, always a favourite, happened to be walking along the road when he saw two forms with sacks on their backs making their way towards the camp. Hey, you fellas, what have you got here? It's all right, sir. It's only two signalers going back to the hut with blankets and kit after being relieved from guard. All right. Carry on, but don't mention I saw you coming from the coal dump. Even the colonel was human enough to shut one eye to the efforts of his men to keep out the wet and cold of that wretched winter. Entering number 15 platoon's hut, he noticed how cosy the atmosphere seemed and remarked, you all seem nice and comfortable here. Then his eye caught sight of the cause of the homely warmth, a huge coke fire in a bucket. He asked where the coke came from, when up spoke one stout soul. From the dump across the road, sir. But there's a sentry there, isn't there? What is the use of a sentry if you go and steal coke like this? Hold the bag up, sir. The colonel went out laughing. Again, I'm not sure most colonels in the British Army would respond in that way. Well, from your massive experience of appearing in front of colonels, do you think they'd respond like that?
Absolutely, but I'm more intrigued as to a sergeant major who seems to be a pirate from Penzance and two signallers who appear to have gone to Eton, judged by their accents.
I just get confused.
Now, a sad story was told by Robert Graves of two soldiers, Private Richard Morgan and Lance Corporal William Price, who ran into serious disciplinary trouble from which there was no way out. Now, this is 2nd Lieutenant Robert Graves, who was at the time 2nd Welsh Regiment, and this is what he says. Two young miners in another company disliked their sergeant, who had a down on them and gave them all the most dirty and dangerous jobs. When they were in billets, he crimed them for things they hadn't done. So they decided to kill him. Later, they reported at battalion orderly room and asked to see the adjutant. This was irregular because a private is forbidden to address an officer without an NCO of his own company acting as go-between. The adjutant happened to see them and asked, well, what is it you want? smartly slapping the small of the butt of their slope rifles, they said, "We've come to report, sir, that we're very sorry, but we've shot our company sergeant major." The adjutant said, "Good heavens, how did that happen?" "It was an accident, sir." "What do you mean, you damn fools? Did you mistake him for a spy?" "No, sir. We mistook him for our platoon sergeant." So they were both court-martialed and shot by a firing squad of their own company against the wall of a convent in Bethune.
Now, that is said, and I'm as you know, I have scepticism about a lot of grave stories, so I looked it up. And it's true, it's true. On the 20th of January 1915, Morgan and Price had indeed shot Company Sergeant Major Hugh Hayes. And whoever they meant to shoot, Gary, whoever they, you know, the sentence was death. And the pair of them were executed by firing squad at Bethune on the 15th of February 1915. Pretty quick, just a month later. Well, of course it was quick, yeah. It's a war, isn't it?
Now, training was a priority that could rarely be evaded. The men had to maintain their basic fitness, and there were new skills to learn, new weapons to master, and new tactics to practice. Now, after the first day or two, rest periods seemed to involve very little rest. And this is Lieutenant John Hills of the 5th Leicestershire Regiment. Now, you remember the accent for Leicestershire, don't you, Pete?
Yes. Oh, God. Right, hey. The weather was not very good, but we managed to do many hours' work. The usual physical training, bayonet fighting, steady drill and extended order work, night compass work and lectures. The most exciting event was one of the night trainings, when Colonel Jones combined cross-country running with keeping direction in dark. The running was very successful, but the runners failed to keep direction and ran for many miles, getting in many cases completely lost. Far into the night, the plaintive notes of the recall bugle could be heard in the various villages of the neighbourhood. And you know, when we put that in the book, I barely sniggered, but that seems hilarious now. I'm just imagining.
Route marches were considered essential to revive the fitness of men who'd been trapped in static warfare.
Yeah, now, you could see that point, though, can't you, Gary? I mean, you're not exactly doing a lot of exercise in the trenches.
No, no. And this is Major Claude Weston of the 2nd Wellington Battalion.
Now, do you remember the trouble I had to find anything humorous by a New Zealander?
I apologise unreservedly to any New Zealanders listening
to the
podcast.
What are you going to say to the Australians, because they hate New Zealanders.
Oh. And this is Major Claude Weston. "This platoon had a sergeant who set an excellent pace and possessed only one man who could not keep step. There are always one or two men in a platoon who, unfortunately, have no sense of time or some other kindred mental defect and who find it an impossibility to follow the regular pace of their fellows. The result is a conscious or unconscious irritation to all but the offender, as regularity would seem to be essential to our brains. To anyone riding behind the platoon, the head and shoulders of the one out of time with the rest were most apparent."
Now, I have to say, that wasn't exactly rib-tickly, but that was one of the
funny. However, it reminds me, when I was in basic training, we used to have a chap who we called Elvis, because he looked like Elvis Costello. And at the time, it was the SLR. And when he carried his rifle, it used to make him lean to the right. So when you watched the marching, you could always see him leaning out of the ranks because of the weight of the rifle. Absolutely true. Now, as usual, the men in turn seized on any opportunity to laugh at their officers. Oh, I don't think that's true. And this is Private Harry Stinton of the 1st 7th London Regiment. How come you get all the London regiments?
And I can't do a Cockney accent either. The whole brigade was training like us. One regiment had a very small man as an officer leading, and some of the men were amused by this. He must have been something like 5'10", 5'11". Jokes were made at the officer's expense, who knew well what was going on, but took very little notice until a joke went too far. Some of the men got up a song that ended with the words, "And a little child shall lead you." A day came when the officer led the man on an extra long march, and they came back feeling tired and footsore. They had tea and were surprised at an order to fall in for another march. When they formed up, the little officer said to them, "Men, we're going on another route march, and a little child shall lead you on horseback." The men came back exhausted, and there were no more jokes about the officer being small after that. Oh, yeah. Gary, I'll pass it over to you. Would they have carried on joking sotto voce, do you think?
Oh, no, but quietly. Route marching was hard work and triggered a considerable amount of comment, and it wasn't all positive. And this is Lieutenant Carol Whiteside.
Carol?
Of the 7th Border Regiment. Border. Mm. One heartily and forcibly agrees with one of our most apt Tommies, who remarked apropos of this continued route marching, "It's not the fucking marching I object to, it's the fucking about."
He was from London, was he?
He was from London, yeah.
Now, they'd practice their rifle shooting, of course they would, and we've dealt with that in past podcasts, but Norman Edwards, who's quite a well-known veteran, he was one of the last, he was chosen to be part of a Vickers machine gun team. That means a lot more training, doesn't it, Gary? And a considerable amount of what else?
Extra weight.
Yeah, to carry into battle. Because although you break it down, the stand and the bits, but the ammunition belts, there's a lot of weight.
Yeah, but like soldiers then and ever since, they appreciated the sheer excitement of the increased firepower as compared to the humble Lee Enfield.
At least most of them did. Now, you've got a special part in this because you know the tune, whereas I failed lamentably.
I don't think no is the right word.
But anyway, this is Norman Edwards, who was in the 1st 6th Gloucestershire Regiment. No, he was quite posh, was Norman Edwards. It was a rather heavy weapon, water-cooled barrel, and there was a separate tripod. Number one did the actual firing. Number two carried a tripod. Each section was four or five men. They had to carry the belts of 250 rounds. We inherited this song from the regular army. Gary?
You can talk about your rifle. You can talk until you stifle. But it's only just a trifle to the gun that we have now. The maxim, of course, is the pride of all the forces. So just unhitch the horses and let the bugger go.
That was brilliant, Gary. Now, you caught hold, this is Norman Edwards continues, you caught hold of the two handles and your thumb pressed the lever and the thing went, no. I thought it went bang, 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 but whatever. He's the veteran, not me. About as fast as that. You gradually traverse the thing on your target. You used to knock it. One-inch tap, they used to call that. Sorry, that's me saying that. I'll get back to Norman Edwards. We had a lecture by an experienced regular machine gun officer. He told us all about the elevations, how you turn the wheel to elevate it. For each degree of elevation, the bullet would go so many feet further on and so forth. When he'd finished, he said, "Now, carry on with the training, Corporal." And the Corporal said, "I'm sorry, sir. I don't think I'd better take that on. I'm a greengrocer in private life." I like the words private life. And now we'll take a short break.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Now, bayonet fighting was regarded as an important component of trench warfare. The atavistic terror of 18 inches of cold steel was not to be underestimated. The men were taught to bellow out loud in the most intimidating fashion as they charged home.
And it would be the same when you did
that.
Well,
we saw it with Taff when we recreated the trench bombing in Gallipoli.
Yes, I remember your part.
And he did his bayonet face.
And his
scream, yeah.
Now, this is Captain John Milne of the 1st 4th Leicestershire Regiment.
You're doing a lot of Leicestershire today.
Aye. Dummies made of sacks full of straw were made to look like Germans and savagely bayoneted and concussed with butt of the rifle. Special attention was drawn to the most vital parts of the body and the rider was added there. 4 inches of bayonet would do the trick. Stranger oaths than have ever entered the fertile brain of Willie Shakespeare were heard on assault course. Now, specialist bayonet trainers, they ram the point home. This is literally, Gary, and figuratively. And this is what Lieutenant John Hill said. Yeah, the great... Notice, Gary, how the two Leicestershire officers have the same accent. The great exponent of the art of bayonet fighting was Major Campbell of the Army gymnastic staff, whose lectures were already well known at the Army schools and who was now sent round country to talk to all battalions. He had devised an entirely new scheme of bayonet instruction on very simple yet practical lines, doing away with many of the old drill book points and parries. That's what they called bayonet fencing, Gary. You might have even done some of that. And training arm and rifle to act with the eye, not on a word of command. His powers as a lecturer were as great as his keenness for subject. And for two hours, he held the attention of a hall full of all ranks, speaking so vividly that not one of us came away feeling that we were good enough to fight six Bosch, given a bayonet, or a machine opener. Sorry. He was particularly insistent on not driving the bayonet home too far. And we shall always remember his saying, "Throat, 2 inches is enough. Kidneys, only 4 inches, just in and out." Which is, then you think about, you know, what it means.
What it means, absolutely.
Because it's a terrible, terrible business. And I think people were terrified of bayonet fighting. And I think I can see why.
Going hand in hand with bayonet fighting in clearing a trench of Germans was also the use of the hand grenade. Men were taught to throw them with an overarm cricket bowling action, but accidents were frequent.
Now, I just want to say that I see why you've picked to do this one, and I see exactly why you've chosen this quote. And I now remember that you insisted it went into the book because you said it was sort of like a dream come true. Although I then would point out that it's absolute tragedy and shouldn't be laughed at.
And this is Lieutenant Lionel Sotheby of the 2nd Black Watch. Aye.
But it's not funny, is it?
Lance Sergeant Hart of A Company took
Who?
A bomb. Hart of A Company took a bomb, bit the fuse and was waiting the usual 5 seconds before throwing it, when suddenly the fuse, being defective, burnt up quickly and the bomb exploded, blew one arm off and most of the stomach, head and face. He was practically killed but was supported by the sides of the trench. The explosion of the bomb set fire to his pouches and all his ammunition. About 150 rounds blew off almost simultaneously. He received practically all these in him. Many bullets flew through him and through pieces of him yards away. He was quite dead now.
No, I think that's absolutely terrible. But the fact he's got the same name as me, he might even, I suppose, have been a relative. And it just brings it home.
It's
just,
horrific,
it is
Pete.
Just horrific. I think when we Paul calls a book Laugh or Cry, that's not laughing. That is just...
That's definitely in the cry side.
I just find that amazing. I wonder if he was a relative. I mean, but there are a lot of Harts. It's not as common as Bane, obviously, but there are a lot of us about.
Now, anyway. Overall, the training was vitally important, but the troops were not enthusiastic about it. Many would have preferred to rest, and one young officer was darkly mordant on their prospects. And this is Second Lieutenant Eric Marchant of the 1st Essex Regiment. We are continuing our usual training, but have now got on to attack formations and tactics again, so there is certain to be some entertainment in the near future. I feel certain that the war will be over by about July 1925.
Optimistic. Yes. They did have to train. I want to make it quite clear. We are not criticising the army for keeping the men fit, for guarding vital installations, for learning new weapons. We're not, are we?
No, and they
the men moaned.
And largely they got the balance about right. There was rest, there was recuperation, and not every army did the rotation system. You know, some stayed in the front lines.
But they have new weapons, especially the British Army, of course, that's the whole thing, moving to the all-arms battle. They've got new weapons, they've got new tactics, and you can't just... magic knowledge, you have to learn it, don't you?
But, you know, let's face it, they couldn't be expected to enjoy it.
Could they be expected to enjoy working parties, Gary?
Well, you could say that was worse than the training. The troops hated them. Officers, NCOs and men were united in detesting the imposition of huge amounts of backbreaking and, worst of all, lethally dangerous tasks at a time when they're supposed to be out the line.
Yeah, they may have been dog weary. They may have been traumatised by all that they'd experienced in the line, but working parties, fatigue duties, seem to dog them like some bloody avenging angel. There seem to be nothing but beasts of burden. Doing what? What?
Well, they've got to take up water, food.
That's heavy.
Ammunition.
Heavy.
Barbed wire.
Pointy.
Telephone cables.
Heavy and difficult.
Duck boards.
Heavy.
And the veritable forests of wood and chicken wire required for revetting.
Sides of the trenches, yeah. Is that it then? That's it, is it?
Well, no, let's think about it. There's always plenty of digging to do. They've got to build roads, improve the trenches, dredging drains, laying pipes and burying signal wire. In fact, doing anything that anybody could think of.
Oh, and what did the army call that?
Rest. There was minimal honour and very little credit for those carrying out these mundane tasks, as one cynical officer mused. And this is one of your favourites. This is Lieutenant Norman Down of the 4th Gordon Highlanders.
He's just great. The man who is going to win the war is poor old Lance Corporal of the unpaid variety. They're poor, yeah. General A wants something doing. He acquaints Colonel B of his wishes. Colonel B notifies Captain C, who in turn passes on the good news to Second Lieutenant D, who skillfully shifts the burden to Sergeant E. Sergeant E, intent on obtaining a disproportionately large issue of rum for his platoon and himself, details Lance Corporal Unpaid F. Lance Corporal F takes 6 men, 3 shovels and a tin of chloride of lime, and the job gets done. Then he returns and reports the completion of the job to Sergeant E. Sergeant E steps up to Second Lieutenant D, salutes and reports, "I've done that job, sir." I mark you, no mention of Lance Corporal F. Lieutenant D wires to Captain C, "Have done job." Captain C sends message by orderly to the effect that he, Gary, mark you, has completed the allotted task. Colonel B writes, "I beg to report that this work has been brought to a satisfactory conclusion by me." General A, replete with a good dinner, receives the message. "Good fellow, that Colonel B," he murmurs. Well, there's a lot of truth in that, in the army, but that, in a way, that is just how it is. isn't it? That's very much as I remember talking to one of your underlings at TFL. Yeah, he said, that Gary takes all the credit. He says he saved us 8 billion trillion pounds, but it was May that did the work. I remember them all saying that to me.
And all unpaid.
They were very well paid compared to me.
Now, carrying parties were very much detested. The quantities of material required in the front line were such that the garrisoning battalions could not carry everything they would or might need during their tour of duty.
Yeah, that's if you think about it, as they move into the line, they can't carry all this stuff, can they? So this is what Lieutenant Dennis Barnett of the 2nd Prince of Wales Leinster Regiment.
It's a very difficult journey from here to where we are digging, and the sailing directions are like this. Across field to haystack, bear half left to dead pig. Cross stream 25 yards below dead horse. Up hedge to shell hole, and then follow the smell of 3 dead cows across a field, and you'll arrive at exactly the right place. The best of these landmarks is that you can use them on the darkest night. I brought my lads back on a shortcut I devised for myself, including a couple of dead dogs and a certain amount of one German. It is a much better way, and I got the bearing so well that I walked right into the last cow without even smelling her. So strong was the wind blowing the other way.
I want you to notice a certain amount of one German. Now, the loads had to be carried were often heavy. And what it's the thing, sometimes we always say, it's not the weight of a load, is it? What is it?
No, it was also the shape. Sometimes that rendered carrying them through a communication trench an almost impossible task. Arthur Beattie revels in his adventures with a 12-foot-long plank. And you're going to tell us what Private Arthur Beattie of the 15th London Regiment, that's the Civil Service Rifles,
harsh buggers,
says.
To the end... And do you remember the film The Plank with Eric Sykes?
Yeah, vaguely. I'm
and
a bit young.
Ronnie Barker.
I'm a bit 60s.
Young. It was a sort of silent film in the 60s.
I'm a bit young.
No, you're not, Gary. You've seen it hundreds of times. Anyway, this if those of you who have seen The Plank will recognise this. Right, here we go. To the initiated.
Uninitiated.
Did I say? I meant to say uninitiated. It's a difficult word, that. Who have only witnessed the carrying of a plank along the King's Highway, plank carrying may appear, at first sight, a very humdrum occupation. But when two men endeavour to negotiate the twists and turns of a tortuous trench bearing in on their shoulders a 12-foot plank, the possibilities are endless. The diabolical malice of things inanimate is well known. The propensity for bread and butter to fall face downwards on the best carpet and the elusive gambols of the wily collar stud are everyday occurrences. That's interesting because one of those is still common and the other one isn't. Anyway, he goes on. But for absolutely fiendish cunning, commend me to a 12-foot plank. Flut. We had not gone more than 100 yards along the trench before my rifle got between my legs and caught in my putty. I, naturally enough, I can see where you're getting wrong, naturally enough, leant the plank on the parapet and bent down to unfasten my leg. This was the opportunity for which the plank, having lulled us into a false sense of security by its apparent docility, was waiting. With diabolical malice, it leapt from the parapet and smote me on the back of the head. As there were no stretcher bearers in the neighbourhood, I quickly recovered and we proceeded on our pilgrimage. Ere long, we arrived at an exceedingly sharp turn, the projecting piece being made of sandbags. We were just thinking of sitting down to discuss the matter when one of the men in the traverse came to our aid. Poor lad, he didn't know that plank. We'll shove it over the top, seizing one end. He leapt lightly to the top of the pile of sandbags ere we could warn him. His retribution was quick. The pile of sandbags collapsed. Our good Samaritan was hurled through the air. The plank swung round and hit him on the head while the avalanche of sandbags buried Ebo Smith. That's his name. I dug Ebo out. We thanked our friend, hoped we hadn't upset him, and left him seated and thinking deeply amidst the debris of his ruined traverse. Whether the plank had satiated its lust for blood, or whether it was again a trace of the triumph of mind over matter, I know not, but it gave us no more trouble. And I do love the idea of this evil plank.
General working parties were sent forward. I was going to say something about you being an evil plank, but I've decided not to. But now I've done it. Now, general working parties were sent forward to attend to a variety of tasks. Francis Buckley was amused by some helpful signs they encountered. And this is Second Lieutenant Francis Buckley of the 7th Northumberland Fusiliers. It's very posh. Here on the second day, I took a small party of men, as a working party, to the shelters at the Sunken Road, rather nearer the line. I think we were engaged in clearing the road of mud and generally cleaning up. On the way there, I saw some rather humorous notices stuck up at various points. This is a dangerous spot. It was kindly meant, no doubt, but on the whole, no part of the salient afforded much of a rest cure, and it was practically all under direct observation of the enemy. We existed simply through his forbearance. The implication being everywhere's a dangerous spot.
Of course. Now, of course, some soldiers were malingerous. Sorry, Gary, but they were. And this is, they'd do anything to avoid working parties. And this is a fantastic story told by Sergeant Joe Fitzpatrick of the 2nd 6th Manchester Regiment. And he told this to me. I remember interviewing him. Funnily enough, I had concussion when I did this. I'd just fallen off my bike, smashed my head into the side of the road. And when I got there...
Oh, I thought you were carrying a plank.
Dun, dun, dun. And so I was slightly concussed when he told me this. And he said, anyway, this is what Joe Fitzpatrick said. I used to take my platoon up to the line to do a lot of repair work. It was a bright morning and we left the men in road and were marching up this blank road to go further up towards the salient. The sun was shining right in your face and all of a sudden one of the chaps fell. I went to him and had a good look at him and when he came round I said, are you all right? He said, no, I'm not all right. I said, you can find your own way back, can't you? Yes, yes. Right, I'll get back. I thought that was funny. I said, I think this fellow's swinging it. Next morning, we got away again, and I was walking just behind him. He didn't know I was just behind him. He had his eyes on the sun, staring at the sun, till it sent him dizzy. When he'd been staring a good minute or so, I gave him such a push in back. He turned round as if to say, what's that for? I said, keep your eyes on the bloody floor. Don't keep looking at that fellow up there, he means the sun. He didn't do it again. You see, what they do, they think of all sorts of little things. It just depends on the individual. Now, were you that kind of soldier, or were you the Joe Fitzpatrick kind?
I was the Joe Fitzpatrick. I always looked down. I was looking at my feet most of the time.
To avoid falling over.
Now, most of them kept their sense of humour to see them through, even when they were assigned to the most disgusting tasks. And this is Lance Corporal William Andrews of the 1st 4th Black Watch.
Scottish, and he was Scottish.
Aye. A dead horse lay in the orchard, and I had to take charge of its burial. We had our unspeakable fill of burying our dead, using blankets to collect the pieces of some poor fellows. But the burial of that stinking old horse stands out in my memory as one of the most dreadful jobs we ever had to do. Nick, gentle, fastidious Nick, was one of the burial party, and when it was over, he sat and wrote a mock heroic poem beginning, "Here lies a one-time faithful Gigi, for a shell came and knocked him squeegee." Thank God we could still laugh at our trials.
And that's it, isn't it, Gary? That's the theme of our book. And even that quote, as you were reading in that facetious accent, I noticed that people...
No, it's Scottish. Yeah. I don't know where facetious is.
I noticed that there's a reference to people being blown to pieces. And that, but the soldiers at the time, how did they get through it, Gary?
Well, we've mentioned this. That right at the start of the book, we tried to make it clear. Sometimes the humour is dark. But it's how they dealt with it. It's how they got through the day. Because, actually, how else would you?
Yeah, I don't think we could. And but we've had different upbringing. It's not that the modern generation's useless. It's just that in our particular case, we've been brought up
differently. I wouldn't call you modern.
No. Oh, would you call me useless?
Often.
Thanks, Gary.
Cheers, Pete.
Cheers. Thanks for listening to the show.
Blah, blah, blah.
If you'd like to support
blah,
us,
blah,
you can now buy us a coffee.
Blah, blah,
visit www.buymeacoffee.com/PGMH
or visit www.blahblahblahblah.
And we'd be jolly grateful.
Cheers.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook to learn more about each episode. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you have a couple of options. You can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/PGMH or consider subscribing to the podcast for only £2 per month and get ad-free listening and bonus content. You can find links for both on our Facebook and Twitter accounts.
Sounds great, doesn't it?